All right, we're good to go.
All right. Well, welcome everyone. Officially, this is a virtual meeting of the Lestard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and I'm calling the meeting to order. It is 8:09 on June 24th, 2000. The meeting is held in a with the memo dated April 21st, 2020 from the LCC chair and vice chair regarding commission meetings held remotely. You may have already seen or heard these procedures. However, for those of you that are unfamiliar with them, please mute yourself if you're not talking so we don't catch any background noise. Use the raise hand feature if you want to speak, which is at the bottom of your screen under the reactions tab. If you put your cursor towards, move the cursor on your screen, it'll show up on the bottom under reactions. We'll be using a roll call to vote. So we'll unmute everyone for that. And the materials we're on, the website. So we'll return to the agenda. That's all right with everyone. Before I do the agenda, I'd just like to welcome Amanda, our newest staff person who organized this meeting on short notice since she started last week. But welcome, Amanda. We're glad to have you on board. Agenda today is shortened from what we would have liked to do just because expecting everyone to sit on long meetings by Zoom is pretty deadly, or at least I find it such. We'll talk quite a bit about how we're going to conduct ourselves going forward in terms of the proposals a little later in the meeting, but I have been encouraging staff to find some way that when we do hearings in early September, that we do them in person, because the thought of sitting on Zoom meetings for 2 to 3 days solid seemed to be beyond my comprehension in terms of how we would keep attention and frankly be fair to those that are presenting, because late in the day I suspect it would be tough for people. So we're investigating maybe how we can even get a very large room so everyone can socially distance themselves from everyone, but still be together in person, if at all possible. But Mark will give us a report on that. The first order of business is just to review and approve the agenda. You've been sent the agenda. If you've got no questions, I would take a motion to approve it, and then of course we'll have to do a roll call vote to approve it. Would someone move approval of the agenda? Kristen?
I'll move, I'll move it.
Great. Any discussion? Sandy, you're doing the roll call vote, or Amanda, who's doing the roll call votes? I can't.
I'm doing the roll call votes.
All right, Amanda, great.
All right, Hartwell.
Yes.
Hartwell votes yes. Swenson.
Yes.
Swenson votes yes. Saxhog. Saxhog.
You're muted, Tom.
Yes.
Saxhog votes yes. Shara.
Yes.
Shara votes yes. McNamara.
Yes.
McNamara votes yes. Eggerling.
Yes.
Eggerling votes yes. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn votes yes. Fabian.
Yes.
Representative Fabian votes yes. Peters.
Yes.
Peters votes yes. Senator Lang.
Yes.
Senator Lang votes yes. Senator Tomassoni.
Yes.
Senator Tomassoni votes yes. Holston. Holston?
Mark, unmute yourself. I don't think Mark's voting.
It doesn't appear that he's connected. There's not a microphone next to his name. Connected by audio.
I see two blocks for him. Do you see that?
Yes.
And one has a microphone and one doesn't.
Yes, I see two blocks for him on this side.
Neither appear to be working, so I guess he's not voting.
All right, then we have 11 ayes and one no vote, or one person who did not vote.
Great, the motion passes. You were previously sent the minutes of our last meeting. I would love a motion to approve the minutes. Oh, Mark came in with his thumb. So you're voting late, right, Mark? Yes. All right, can we have a motion to approve the minutes that we were sent? From someone.
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion? Amanda, you want to do a roll call vote on the minutes?
Yes. Roll call vote on the minutes. Hartwell.
Yes.
Hartwell votes yes. Swenson.
Yes.
Swenson votes yes. Saxhag.
Yes.
Saxhag votes yes. Shara. Shara?
Ron, unmute yourself, please.
Yes.
Shara votes yes. McNamara?
Yes.
McNamara votes yes. Eggerling?
Yes.
Eggerling votes yes. Becker Finn?
Yes.
Becker Finn votes yes. Fabian?
Yes.
Fabian votes yes. Peters.
Yes.
Peters votes yes. Lang.
Yes.
Lang votes yes. Tomasoni.
Yes.
Tomasoni votes yes. Holston. Holston.
I think Mark is having some technical problems, so we'll just assume that he'll join us when he can work them out and move on.
All right, so we've got 11 aye votes and one not present.
Great, motion carries. So Mark, you want to give us an executive director's report?
Sure. sorry about that. Good morning and nice to see you all. Just as a note here, I know that Mark, if he's having technical difficulties there, it sounded like his waving of the hand did work under reactions for that one vote. So if nothing else, maybe he can connect that way or potentially just log back in. But. David already mentioned that we have our new commission assistant, Amanda Schnabel, and I just wanted to also welcome her. She's been on for, a little over a week now, so we're glad to have her on. The technical challenges that have already shown up for the technology here is already testing her mettle, and she's taking it in stride. She's not bouncing off the walls that we're seeing, so we're glad to have you on, Amanda. Thanks for joining us. A few things in your packets or in the information today, there were some conveyances. I'll go through those first. There was a conveyance to DNR that was approved, that I approved on behalf of the council through our procedures. It was regarding Gilfill and Lake. It was for a 0.06 acres conveyance so that there was a road widening on County Highway 27 that was necessary. And that approval went through. In the materials, you'll find that if you haven't already looked at them, there's many pages of background information on that, as well as maps that show you the how it affects the edge of the WMA on Gilfil and WMA. A second one was the Minnesota, the DNR down in Nicolet County. And Nicolet County had actually, the conveyance was regarding a road reconstruction. They were widening the road to, as I understand, take care of farm, or to accommodate, well, safer traffic, but also the farm travel on those roads. The there was 1.1 acres of temporary easement involved in that, and also 1.7 acres of permanent easement. And again, it the maps, I think it's page 3 of that set, shows where the WMA was affected. It was just along the edge right of the road. The last one is has not been, as the letter's gone out for approval. The final approval would be July 14th to give the amount of time for leadership to review it. But that's from MnDOT request, and it's regarding the Blandon easements up in Itasca County. MnDOT reconstruction and culvert repairs are highway number 1, which is in northern Itasca County. I think it's in northeastern Itasca County. And it's, the total conveyance would be for 5.53 acres. And then like the others, the Outdoor Heritage Fund would be reimbursed for those conveyed lands. In those packets, in the packet of information on the MnDOT for Itasca County, there's also the seed mixtures that were being used for the wetlands and native seed and everything else there. They put in there afterwards. I don't know if there are any questions on those. Otherwise, I'll keep moving on. No? Okay. Also, in your information today, there was a letter from Senator Strawman, which to the council, which was basically saying thank you. And you can read that at your leisure if you haven't already. And it did talk a little bit about their roving crews and the proposals that they're putting in and so on. And we'll get to that after a little while. Or get in more detail on the roving crews when we talk about the proposals. And then the other thing was, most of you have received this by mail, or else you've gotten an email on it, but it's basically a invitation from Ducks Unlimited to join a Freeborn Lake dedication and open house that will be this Saturday out of Freeborn, Minnesota. So they're inviting everybody or anybody to come out for that. I guess the other things we'll get into under business, but I do want to make sure there are three other things I had in my notes to say. And first of all, special thanks to Sandy, Joe, and Amanda, all three of you, for your excellent work during this whole COVID-19 experience. The working from home has had really unique, special difficulties and challenges to it, the virtual meetings and everything else. And I just want to let the council know the staff has... those three have been really wonderful to work with, so I appreciate them very much. I also want to thank David and Ron and each of you council members for your patience during all of this. And hopefully we're ironing out the details and things will continue to get smoother as they have been day by day. But again, thank you. And lastly, at the passing of my mom, I was really touched by each of the outreach I received from you all. Your wonderful calls, emails, texts, cards, and the flowers that were sent. So I just want to say thank you very much for your kindness. And Mr. Chair, that ends my report unless there are questions.
Great. Does anyone have questions for Mark? I'm not seeing anybody or hearing anybody. So, Jamie, yes.
Mr. Chair, I think this is our first meeting since we passed the bill about recording our meetings and passing our bill. So I don't know if you want to speak to that or if Mark can talk about what that looks like going forward. But, you know, we were able, of the things that didn't get done this legislative session, that was something that did get done this year. And so I don't know if that was already, we already planning to talk about that or not, but just wanted to make sure folks were aware that we are going to be making our meetings available to the public in a more regular way than maybe we did in the past.
Yeah, that's great. This is being recorded, so it's available. I think we'll get into that into the legislative recap and update, which staff is going to get to next. But thank you for pointing that out to all of us. And thank you for your work to make it happen. So any other questions for staff, just on general? So let's go into the legislative recap and update, Mark.
Mr. Chair and members, yes. Well, I might as well hit the first one first. There are a number of things that changed this session. One of those was the legislation that went through that mandated live streaming. Thank you, Representative Becker Finn and others for that. This, as David had mentioned, this event right now, this meeting is being live streamed as well as recorded. So it'll be audio as well as video recordings permanently on our site, plus it's live streamed right now. And actually, I'm gonna ask Amanda if she would give us also what, Amanda, if I'm correct, this is live streamed on our YouTube right now, and the link is on our meetings page right now as well, correct?
That's correct. It's being live streamed on YouTube at the moment, and also on the LCC Facebook page. And then the link is provided on both our website and the combined legislative calendars, and it went out in the listserv as well.
So our August meeting, our meetings in September, et cetera, will all continue to be live streamed to the best of our ability. First thing we do is, Amanda actually is our tech person now with regards to that.
Yeah, so it's awful.
So she contacts, I'm going to mention that, there we go. She contacts the Senate as well as the House to find out how can it be streamed and so on. But at any rate, the details will be taken care of. When we are off premise,
this is awful.
If we have a meeting at some other location, we will find that there's a mandate that says when practicable, the live streaming will happen, and we'll make every effort to make sure those are live streamed as well. So besides that, the bill did go through, and I'd like to entertain comments from the authors, from the legislators in a moment here, but there was a haircut that had to be made to the bill, and each of you were kept appraised of that through the emails that happened. There was, when the final forecast came in, it was quite a bit lower than what the bill was, and the haircut ended up being about 14%, 12.8 to 14, somewhere in there. Maybe just a hair over 14, I can't remember off the top of my head. But at any rate, it went back to very close to what the council had originally looked at back in November for recommendations. Through that haircut, that across the board percentage reduction, each of the proposals was still viable, and all of them were able to continue with their work. We had no objections from the recipients. They were all just happy to see the bill go through and very supportive. But at this point, maybe it'd be good to hear some of the feedback from the legislators, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please. Who would like to go first and give us the inside story?
Well, I don't know if there's much of an inside story. I think the bill takes a relatively long path through both finance and policy committees. And I think it's possible, it's one of those bills that historically has been messed with very little. And part of that is, I think, and this is what I tout when I talk about the bill and the council as a whole, is the fact that you can oftentimes tell what a good council and what a real deep dive into some of these projects that we all take provides a good piece of legislation. And when we go through the committee process, you can oftentimes see that nobody messes with it. Nobody's really worried about what the Lizard Sam's Council says. They trust that our judgment on these projects is good. And oftentimes I take that, when I take that to the floor, and as I've carried this bill over the last few years, my litmus test is exactly that of what Senator Dick Cohen usually has to say about the bill. And this year he had very little to say about the bill. So I guess as it progresses and as this council looks at the upcoming projects, just keep that in mind. And I think we do a good job of providing a great product. And yeah, he didn't have a whole lot to complain about this year. So good work to the council for that. And as far as the reduction in dollars going out to some of these projects, you know, it's tough when in the other elected officials probably are going to agree with this, that it's tough when you see, you know, an increase of dollars as those projects go out. And then, of course, as the economy retracts somewhat, it was sad. You know, I was kind of bummed out as I saw those dollar values fall. But I was reminded by a couple of lobbyists that shall remain nameless that, hey, you got to realize that you're putting 100, 115, 100, what did we end up at, Mark? 117? I think we were at, I can't remember the final dollar. It bounced up and down a little bit. But we're putting well over $100 million into the environment, and take that for what it is, that we're still doing good work. So, yeah, with that, if there's any questions about any of the legislation that's gone through.
And Mr. Chair, if I can weigh in too. I would echo a lot of what Senator Lang just said. You know, I think this is a council that folks tend to trust the work that we're doing. And I do think the kind of greater accountability and transparency, I think, will only add to that if folks can more easily follow along with how we get to our recommendations. I think that will hopefully make our work easier going forward. And I certainly, in talking to folks, I think we were afraid actually that the haircut was going to be worse than it actually ended up being. You know, I think at some point the projections were that we might have to cut 25%. So was happy that that wasn't any worse than it was. But I mean, we really didn't have, you know, working with Representative Fabian and others on the House side, the bill was actually carried by Leon Lilly, since he's the chair of the Legacy Committee. So we definitely thank Chair Lilly for his work in helping us get this across the finish line as well. And you know, the other sort of funds, you know, whether it's LCCMR or other legacy things, you know, didn't make it across the finish line. So I'm really glad that this was something we were able to do. And again, I think that, you know, making sure that those public dollars are going towards what people thought they would be going towards, you know, when they paid for them and passed the amendment is really important. So really thank everyone else too for their work, because I think our robust discussions and the way that we work together is really helpful when it comes time to actually pass this in the legislature. So good job, everybody.
Great, thank you both for your hard work on this. You make it sound easy, and I know it's not. It takes a lot of time and perseverance. Mark, any other update on the session?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Follow up with Senator Lang, ended up being $117.9 million. So it definitely was not an insignificant amount. And if we think about it, we've only had 1 year prior to this where it was over that. And I think that was last year's or year before, 120 million roughly. So there's, it's definitely still a large amount of money. There were two other factors in the bill that helped us stay at that 117, that helped to make up some of the deficit. One of those factors was that Bushman Lake was returned. Bushman Lake acquisition from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, did not go through, and the conservation fund said, you know, we're not going to be purchasing that land. The county doesn't want to accept that, or the feds will not accept that land with our NOFR restrictions. And that was a change of internal policy, so to speak, with the Department of Ag and the feds. So that money came back. That was a couple million. And then there was also another several hundred thousand that came back from the Melrose Dam for something around 700,000. So those helped to keep us up a little bit further. There is one other thing with regards to the legislative session that I wanted to bring out. In your packets, there is a extension of appropriation availability due to COVID-19 is the title on it. And within legislation, there was an extension, I think you were all aware of through, but also by the emails from staff previously, that allowed for any appropriations that were due to lapse, cancel, or expire on June 30th, 2020 to be extended for one more year or until June 30th of 2021. So that that extension of availability that's in the information shows a list of all those appropriations. Each of those proposers or recipients, the project managers, have a couple of things they're supposed to do. One was to inform staff that they want to have to make available the or to use the availability of the extension, and also was to provide an amendment or provide information for an amendment toward that. Each of them that did, we have quite a number of them from ML 15, 16, and 17 that are taking avail of that one-year extension, and there's just a list there for your information. From what happens from now is that staff will contact MMB as well as the Commissioner of Natural Resources with the information on who is taking availability or avail of those of that extension, and then it will become law. So those extensions are not something for the count that the council has to accept. It's provided in law. It's just that those people have to provide the information to the council. It's processed through here, and then we get a hold of MMB and DNR to let them know what's happening. And unless Sandy or Joe can think of something else, or you, Mr. Chair, I think that's it pretty much for the legislative recap.
Yeah, any questions by council members? If not, thank you to the staff who I know spent a lot of time working through all of the issues to get this bill passed, and the legislators who made it happen. It truly is a team effort. With that, we'll move into approval of the accomplishment plans. I would just tell you every one of our recipients had to amend their draft accomplishment plans to reflect the change in amounts. Staff has gone through that work and prepared a very helpful memo, I thought. With that, I will turn it back to staff and then your questions.
And Joe, if you'd like to run this one.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. If you go on to the agenda item number 6 memo, we compared the 14% budget haircut. And so what we were comparing was the December accomplishment plan. If you remember, there was extra money available back then, so the project managers raised their budgets to match the higher amounts, and then after the forecast came in and was lower, then they had to lower it again. So what we did was we compared the December versus the lower 14% cut, and you'll see there's a big list of all of the projects. And what we tried to do was just give you a general sense of how the project managers either changed their accomplishment plan with like the work that they're doing, either going from restoration to acquisition or something like that, but also in general how they allocated their budgets. And for the most part, everybody was pretty good. Some just did a straight reduction across the board in all of their budget line items, and some left their personnel and direct support services and that stuff a little higher. Most reduced their acreage, and that was obviously due because they don't have as much money. Some left it the same, and some also reduced their match monies, usually proportional with the 14% cut, but some actually left their match the same as well. So you'll see there's nothing that sticks out in our minds as something that the council should ask questions more about or not approve their accomplishment plan until questions are answered. So I think everything is in pretty good shape, and now we're waiting for approval so that the money can be spent on July 1st.
So you were all sent the accomplishment plan comparison. Do you have questions? Or are you waiting for me to ask them all? All right, I'll ask a few. I went through and highlighted where there seemed to be questions in the accomplishment plan comparison. So I would just start 2A, personnel stayed the same, but BSS increased to $1,600. This is the DNR WMA SNA acquisition. Staff, do you have any rationale for that?
Mr. Chair and members, we don't have any rationale for that. When we circled back on this, we didn't think it was a huge issue. It seemed to be in line with what everybody else was doing. I know Jay Johnson is on the call, and he's the project manager, so we would luck out and have him on the call if he wanted to answer.
I think that would be great.
I don't know, Amanda, if you can get him access to.
Mr. Chair and Joe, he had to leave at a little bit early, I think at like 1:45, and I just saw him exit the room a short while ago, so we may have lost him. And I believe we were supposed to have Christine, but I don't see her.
Well, Amanda, if you see them come back, let me know and we'll circle back to this then.
Will do.
The Northern Forest Habitat Conservation Project, Joe, 3C, on your list. You said in a great big bold letters, need changes.
Oh. Yep, Mr. Chair, you have the old copy of the handout.
I'm sorry, I worked off the old copy. How would I know there's a new copy?
They did fix their accomplishment plan.
Okay.
That was just a typo.
Is that true for 3D as well?
Correct.
DNR Forest Habitat Enhancement?
Yep.
Okay. How about 4B, Shallow Lake and Wetland Protection Restoration Program? The DSS increased from 20,000 to 30,000 when the dollars allocated went down 14%. That did not make sense to me.
Again, that was something that we didn't think was out of line with what was happening. We can always ask for further clarification if the council feels like that's what they want.
I certainly wouldn't vote to approve an increase in DSS with a decrease in money in terms of real dollars. That seems kind of odd to me. So what about 5D, needs changes, fisheries habitat protection strategies in our Central Lake? Did they get that changed?
Correct. That's been changed.
Okay. those were the questions that I had. So the only one of significance is the shallow lake and wetland protection.
Mr. Chair and members, we did see a general trend that a lot of the project managers either left their personnel and direct support services the same, even though the budget went down, or so the total percent, if you look at some of the comments, it'll say the total percent of the appropriation for personnel and direct support services actually went up because that didn't get reduced with the reduction in funding. So there's a higher percent of money going to that, even if they left it the same. And some did actually increase their personnel and direct support services. So there was a general trend, and I don't know if that's because of a scale in economy or something to that effect. We could send out an email and ask about all of that, but I'm guessing that's what we're gonna get.
Yeah, I understood the percentage increases, but I didn't understand how you would increase your DSS 50% when your reduction in funds goes down by 14%. That one to me stood out. But Jamie has a question.
Yes, I was just curious if staff has heard from any of the programs in regards to why we're seeing that trend, if there was any feedback on that whatsoever.
Mr. Chair and members, what I've heard anecdotally is just that with the economy and the uncertainty of funding, that they wanted to be safer than sorry.
Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I heard the same thing as Joe did. There's a lot of uncertainty with regards to the COVID and what's going to happen. Is it going to take them more time? Is it going to get things done? Or is it going to just what all is going to happen? The one thing that I did also found out from talking to Grants Management's leader over there, Catherine, was that they watch the DSS and all of those very carefully, so that there has to be accountability for those in the reimbursements. And she said that's one thing they will definitely be keeping an eye on moving forward. Along with that, of course, remember that the budget areas can be amended, so they can be shifting if they find out, okay, we're over anticipating on DSS or over anticipating on our whatever it is, they can move it into contracts or whatever, just by putting in an amendment with staff and asking for approval.
Other questions, comments? So I would love a motion to approve this. My personal feeling is that we should carve out the wetland, the shallow lake and wetland protection program for approval at our next meeting, subject to a clarification on the increase from 20,000 to 30,000, but I'm waiting for a motion from someone.
I'll make that motion.
So the motion is to approve the accomplishment plans, carving out shallow lake and wetland protection and restoration, pending additional information. Are there any questions? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, yeah. It's Denny. Joe, yeah. Is there a chance that we could get more information before we're done today?
Mr. Chair and members, it's possible. I will email as we're sitting here.
Mr. Chair, can we delay the vote just to see if Joel can get an answer? It's Denny. Thanks.
Anyone object to delaying the vote? All right, that's fine. So we will come back to that So let's move on to a discussion of the proposals that we have in hand for the next round. And I'll start with staff on this. Mark, do you want to?
I'm fiddling with my keyboard here, sorry. Mr. Chair and members, the proposal-wise, we received 53 proposals. We have not been able to print the binders yet for everybody or for those who wish them. And after this meeting, we will be finalizing the last bits, so we'll be able to get the links to you for all of the proposals and send binders to those who wish them. There are 53 proposals that were brought in. There are some, you're going to find that there are a few extras, two or three extras, and I'll just mention those quickly, because with regards to those that the chair and the vice chair, so David and Ron, both met with staff, with DNR, after the last meeting, the would be January meeting, and the discussion that was held about roving crews then, there was a interest of the council at that time to follow up and get some more information with regards, should roving crews be brought in as a separate proposal, or should they, so it's an annual type or a biannual review of funding for roving crews, or should it be incorporated into their other proposals as it has been recently or up until this point? So actually what we asked was for DNR to come back with their wetlands proposal with the roving crews like normal, and then come back with that same proposal without roving crews, but then put in a separate roving crew collaborative conglomeration proposal. So most likely we're going to not have 53 proposals in the end. We're going to be minus at least one and possibly two of those overlapping. So we'll be able to talk about that a little more, and we'll put out a little more clarity to you when we send the link to you later this week or beginning next week with regards to the proposals. There was one other proposal that came in also that I have two different inquiries or messages to the project manager. It came to us through the University of Minnesota, and it does not meet our statutory requirements because it's enhancement work or supposed enhancement work that would be done on private land that is not permanently protected. And it's for $555,000, I think it was. If that stays in the projects, in the proposals, my recommendation is going to be that is not for review just because it doesn't meet the statutory requirements. But I'm contacting the individual to see if he minds pulling it so that we don't have to follow that route. The binders, just very quickly, I have here's the binder as normal. That looks familiar to you. And what I have, I want to thank each of you for getting back to me, because we had put out the email asking, do you really want a big binder or not? And many of you are trying it virtually this year. I'm kind of an old horse in that I kind of need it in paper in front of me. So I understand those who want to see it in paper. Here's who I have that want a full binder, a proposal binder. I have Kristen, Tom Saksog, Ron Shera, Ashley Peters, Representative Fabian, Senator Lang, and Representative Becker Finn. Is there any of you that I've mentioned that do not want a paper binder, or anybody who I did not mention who does want a full binder printed and sent? I think I missed one. It was Mark Paulson.
Yep, no, I'm here. I want one in a binder.
That's right. I'm sorry,
Mark. I would prefer one in the binder as well.
Gotcha.
Danny, I need a binder too, Mark. Thanks.
Throw me on the list as well. Thanks, Mark.
Great. So Senator Thomasone is the only one who will be leading us into the virtual world.
I'm more than happy to do that too.
All right, thank you. We oftentimes we get the binders are just a thing to lug around, but they are quite helpful at times, depending on how you like to, how you synthesize information. So I appreciate both sides of this. The AP binders, the actual accomplishment plan binders with the final accomplishment plans, I really only have three individuals who have stated that they want those now, that they would like those full binders, and that is Ashley Peters, Representative Fabian, and Senator Lang. Is there anybody else or any of you that changed that?
Mark, I don't need the binder for the accomplishment plans.
Okay. Very good. And we also keep extra copies of those internally here. So if you do want to ever see them but don't want to keep one yourself, we can always ship one to you or bring it to you and make it available. There's no problem with that. We also make extra copies of the proposal binders for additional legislators who might wish them. Very good. I would like to turn it back to either Sandy or Joe to see if you have any other, Sandy may have some other comments also with regards to the accomplishment plans, the proposals.
I don't have any comments.
Okay. Joe, any additions?
Mr. Chair and members, no comments. I'm working with DU right now on their getting an answer here quick.
Okay. And just one more clarifying thing, Sandy and Amanda, I know that we're going to be that there have been some challenges here internally with even lining up getting these binders printed because of the special sessions that have been happening and the backlogs of printers here at the Capitol, and then just getting in the last minute stuff. We have been hearing back from the project managers with regards to updates. In fact, let me back up, because on each of the proposals, staff sent information, not each of them, but most of them, we sent clarifying questions to the proposers to come back and either fix something in their accomplishment plan or to provide additional information that seemed foggy, didn't seem to give the direction that we thought council would like. So those changes are almost all in. I believe we still have just a couple clarifications left. Is that correct, Sandy? And she's nodding her head, yes, good, okay. So as soon as those are in, and we anticipate that will be yet this week, we'll be able to get everything finalized and get it moving, and ASAP will have it to you. Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. I know there are tremendous amounts of questions that come in about, from potential recipients about the process and what works and doesn't that staff fields. So I appreciate all of staff's work with proposers. To get us to the point where we have proposals to review. As Mark mentioned, Ron and I did meet with staff and the DNR regarding roving crews as the result of the discussion at our last meeting. And the roving crew situation, while they've done great work, the way it's been funded, they put in a proposal for an area or a type of project typically for 5 years, and then we don't give them 5 years funding, so they come back after two or three, and because of how we have done it, one roving crew, even though it's next to a certain area, can't work there because the accomplishment plan doesn't include that area or that type of project. So what you're going to see from them is a proposal to simplify it and just fund roving crews instead of funding them each individually. fund the lot of them. And because some already have funding in the first year or two, they wouldn't need as much because they're already funded as they would going forward. But it would be more like what we've done with Conservation Partners if the council decides that this is a good strategy, where it's an annual appropriation to the roving crews generally, and then they can move them to where they need to be and have more flexibility on their end. So that's what you're going to see from them. Both Ron and I thought that was a good idea and encouraged them to give us a dual track for us to consider. We did not want them to go whole hog and only put in that kind of a proposal to consolidate all of them and then find it for some reason the council didn't like that and that we then weren't funding roving crews at all, which is why you're going to see two different options in terms of roving crews to sort of cover the bases. Ron, do you have anything you want to add to that discussion since you sat in on the meetings? Especially if you unmute yourself.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, because I, after I talk, then something, I see the leader unmute me or something, and no problem. The whole purpose, as you indicated, was to make the roving crews more efficient. So we had set up unknowingly all these little bureaucratic hurdles that, as you said, one roving crew couldn't go do work a wetland because it was supposed to be assigned to a prairie, et cetera, which didn't make a lot of sense to us. And so that was the result of our discussion with them. Let's be more efficient here, getting more, as you like to say, more bang for our buck. So obviously we couldn't get the whole council to chime in on this, but now they will be able to. So hopefully we'll get some clarity here one way or the other.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. And I just would like to let the council know, Ron's been a great partner of mine as we've gone through everything in the last. Now we're going to mute you, Ron. No, Ron's been a great partner. We don't always agree, but we always agree we want to find a common ground, and we worked incredibly well together, and his perspective is very valuable to the process that we're going through. So I just want to thank Ron for being a true partner in leadership here. So next we want to go through how this process is going to work for everyone. And Mark, we didn't talk about how we're going to do this, but I assume you're going to walk us through this.
Sure. And Mr. Chair, at the last, and members at the last meeting, remember, actually it was in December, where we talked about the process of scoring. And of course, as you all are aware, we have criteria that the projects are scored on, or that each of you get a chance to score the projects on. Those criteria have been around for years. They were changed a little bit recently, just from a equalizing the score basis, but they're very subjective. Let's back up. The criteria are fairly objective, but that doesn't mean that everybody votes the same way on them or everybody puts them in the same way. And that's your interpretations of the criteria or your interpretations of what's most important. The important thing to remember is whenever you're scoring, you score the way you score, which is consistent in that. And if everybody's consistent in the way they score, then everything pretty much comes out in the end. But the scoring from a criteria standpoint is very different than what happens when we get into the money angle and looking at how to appropriate funds to these in the fall. And then much more subjectivity comes. And of course, we get more information through the hearings. One of the things that was requested for today was to make sure that everybody had a chance to talk about or to interject how you do your scoring and what do you think is important and what, because there are others who are saying, I'd really like to know how people do their scoring and what their thought process is, even though we have this set of criteria we go by. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would suggest we open it up to members to give some feedback. You may have another wish here as well for how this proceeds.
No, I would open it up to members, you know, with any insights that you can share on the way you score and what makes most sense to you. How have you done it? Just writing down numbers, right? I can tell you personally, there are several of our criteria that you can actually come close to measuring, at least in my opinion, from my perspective. And I actually have set up on the side sort of scoring criteria, the easiest of which is leverage. And if someone's coming in with, say, 0 to 5% leverage, that gets them 1 point. If they come in with 5 to 10, it gets them 3. If they come in with 10 to 15, it gets them 4. I have a numerical score so that I'm consistently treating everyone the same. And there are a couple others where I'm looking for specific things, and I have set up a key for myself and how I score so that I'm consistent. Because it's, you know, reading 53 proposals and remembering how you did it in the second one when you're doing the 46th to be consistent is not the easiest thing. So to the degree possible, I actually create those keys that I can measure against. And some of it is a pass-fail. I mean, do they meet, you know, the basic criteria? You know, you can't sort of do that. So that's my insight. Others? I'm not seeing anybody.
Mark. Sorry, I had my thumb over. You know, the match or leverage, as you said, that's always been a major component, but not necessarily the overriding component. For some of it, though, it's the is it a new focus area or a continuation of a long-term project? Now, for example, you've got the Heron Lake project. That's a new one, large scale. It's going to take multiple years. How I look at that is different from how I'm going to look at, say, WMA acquisition, generically. But then you have other projects that might be coming to the end of their life cycle. And just to put those to bed might sway how I look at or vote on a particular project. So those would be just a couple different thoughts that I had.
Mark, were you waving your hand?
I can come a little bit later. I thought Ron had come off mute there, so I wonder if he has a comment himself.
Yeah, somehow I'm being muted all the time, which is probably a good thing. But just like what David just said, I find this kind of feedback from my fellow council members invaluable on helping me decide on a scoring, a final scoring, because it's been my experience over the years that some council members think of things that I haven't thought about as far as weighing the value of a project. So that's why I think David and I have talked about changing our system at these meetings after the proposals are given, so that we just, as a group, discuss things that I just mentioned, like maybe did you think of this, or the leverage was this, or so that we have more of a group thinking there. It doesn't mean we all have to agree with the scores, but it does at least open up the discussion.
Okay, Mark.
Mr. Chair, if I can interject too, the and I don't know how to raise my hand electronically. I just have to. I'll learn by the next meeting. The discussion in August, or remember, one more way to look at this is these scorings right now that use the criteria is really looking at more of a statutory and then kind of that biological aspect of whether these fit the criteria that's necessary and how well they fit the criteria. Something could score 100% all the way through, and yet when you get to September or August, you're looking at it saying, but practically or from some other aspect, sociologically, whatever, it's just not a good idea. So, you know, that's important for us to keep in mind, is there's a couple different ways that it's going to be gauged in the end. In August, I hadn't mentioned yet, one of the things that we had talked about in December, and the chair has mentioned to me also, and the vice chair, is that we want to make sure that we have time for discussion of the scoring at that point too. So what were your thoughts as you went through the scoring? What were the elements of different projects that were frustrating to you or disappointing to you and so on? And that gives each, or what did you want more information on? And it might be that something comes through again very poorly on the criteria side, this first scoring, and yet you say, Cal, but there's really something there that makes sense, and we want to have them in to discuss it more. So keeping all that in mind, I think, is going to be real important.
Now, one of the important parts of the scoring is it just forces all of us to get familiar with each proposal. If you're going through and scoring it, you actually understand the proposal by the end of reading through them. So it's a very helpful exercise. Jamie?
Yeah, I thought I would just add in. Oh, go ahead, Jamie.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I also think because the background that we each have is so different, that it would be nice, you know, and while keeping that transparency, I actually think maybe Zoom is a good tool, you know, where you could have like a little bit more casual sort of like, you know, some, or, you know, maybe it's a meeting, but it's just not as rigid of a structure to just to discuss what things people are thinking about, you know, before we have sort of the formal process of approving things and just making sure, you know, I think in you don't know what you don't know. And so I think of like the background that each of you brings to this process. Like I don't have that experience or that background. And so I do think there is space to do that without making our like normal meeting take up a ton of time and, you know, all the resources that go into that. And as people get sick of sitting in a meeting that's already long anyway, I do wonder if there are other opportunities to sort of have that feedback from each other. Like, you know, maybe you had on your little notes, you know, oh, but like, did you see exactly where this is located, you know, relative to this? Or did you know that this community is located close to this area? Or like those kind of things that, you know, or, you know, people who have more longer knowledge, deeper knowledge of like prairies themselves might be able to bring some of that knowledge. forward. So I do think there is there's space, and I would be open and willing to you know, have more time or more ability to kind of get that feedback and learn more from each other. I think is probably worth our effort.
Great, thank you. Now, Jamie Swenson.
All right. I wasn't going to speak up before, but I figured that it's helpful for proposers to hear from us and how we actually go through the process. And so, like what has been said previously, I do rely heavily on the matching number, but also I look going through the questionnaire and the proposal evaluations, I rely heavily on how concise the proposal is. If I can't understand it, then the general public will have a really difficult time understanding what the project is and what the impact or the output is. I also look very closely at the performance measures. I want to see us moving the needle. I don't want to just put money towards something that you can't see the benefit. And it's usually probably a very quick return on the investment that I'm looking at. And then also making sure that it addresses the priorities in the state. We've got lots of plans. We put a lot of work and effort into all these different plans across the state and in different areas, and making sure that it's meeting those needs. And once I go through my technical evaluation of each of the proposals, then I come back and look at them and say, you know, which ones were really my favorite? Which ones are the ones that really are going to leave a legacy within the state? Which ones make a difference in the areas or the different regions within the state? Because as everybody knows, there's very different priorities in different regions. And so overall, I kind of look at it and maybe tweak some numbers here and there and arrive at the final numbers. And that's just kind of how I do it, I guess.
Great. Thank you. Kristen?
I just wanted to mention that I really appreciate the extra reports or whatnot that the staff puts together analyzing different things. I don't utilize all of them, but I find them very helpful in helping me decide how I'm going to rate them. So.
Now, I would just add that I would encourage anyone, if you've got a question or a comment about any proposal, write it in the comment section so that it's shared with everyone. It ends up being very helpful to go through and see how other people interpreted the same thing you read. So I would encourage you to use the notes section, not just the numerical numbers, for anything that comes to mind as you're reading the proposals, because many of us will read them and learn from that, or find other questions that we want to make sure are answered as a result of the expertise of the collective group. David, do you have a comment?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I too agree with the matching part of the proposal. That is a very important part of the proposal. I wonder if we have too many rating categories and if we could reduce them down to maybe four or five. And I don't know if that makes any sense or not. I haven't put a lot of work into looking how I would reduce or what I would say is not necessary, or combining one or two into a category. It seems like we have a real lot of columns for rating a project, and I don't know that we need them all. But that's, I don't have any good suggestions at this point in time as to how to streamline it, but it might make the work that we do a little bit easier, and at the same time maybe it might be the wrong direction to go. I don't know. It's just the thought that I'm having here.
So Mark, I'm going to give you the assignment of making sure we come back to that. I don't think we can do anything with this session, but let's have a discussion at a future meeting late in the fall before we put out the RFP next year as to how we want to look at scoring overall, and are we happy with the system or not. The one thing change we made this time was everything gets 10 points, because we had some that got 5 and some that got 15 and some that got 10, and it seemed rather arbitrary. So this time everything is on a scale of 1 to 10 in each of the 10 categories totaling 100. We tried to make it a little simpler, but I would be happy to have us make it more efficient if we can find a way to do that. So let's put that on an agenda for a future meeting, Mark. Jamie, did you have another question or is your hand just still raised? Jamie Swenson.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to one thing Kristen made me think of it, relying on staff too for previous projects and the success of those projects and how well they've met their objectives. I looked to the staff's report on that as folks are looking for additional funding for the year, how well have they done in previous years? And then same thing, like what Mark said, if it's a new project, you know, how many times are they going to be coming back? Is this a one and done or is it going to be, you know, version 25 in the future? So other things that I look at as well.
Great. Other comments on the scoring? Seeing none, we'll move on to the hearings itself. Mark?
Mr. Chair, I believe Ashley Peters has her hand
up. I'm sorry, Ashley, I missed you. I didn't see the
hand. That's okay. It was a last minute hand raise.
Sometimes you just gotta wave.
I was trying to figure out the best way to interrupt. I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for discussing this. As you'll remember, I wasn't appointed until September of last year, so this is really my first time through the scoring process. So I really appreciate the discussion because it gives me a better understanding of how to look at these things as we look through the proposals this year. That was all.
Great. So now, Mark, do you want to talk about hearings?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So members, with the September, there's a couple of things with regards to the hearings. First, just from a practicality of how the hearing's going to, how it's going to happen and where, we're not sure yet. We're trying every way we can to have an in-person meeting. And we will continue down that road unless we're told by leadership that we cannot. I don't know if leadership would tell us that, but I'm sure if the governor said, no, we're shutting everything down because we have a third spike or whatever the heck it is, that we may end up looking at virtual. But regardless, staff is looking at every option and we're gonna try to keep planning for the unplannables. So, but if we have an in-person meeting, we're looking at, or when we have the meeting, whether it's in-person or virtual, we're looking at about 50 different applications to review if we do all of them. And whether we do all of them is very much up to you, the council members, and what you choose in August. And I'm not going to tell you that you shouldn't do all 50. But because that's your decision, and it really depends on how you think they all shake out. That's another reason why this initial scoring is important, because it gives you a chance to really look at them and say, yeah, here's the bottom of the barrel by these criteria. And if they don't have some other reason for bringing them up further, then you may wish not to hear them. But if we're going to be looking at all 50, then we're looking at 2.5 days roughly of reviews, unless you wanted 2 extremely long days where you go until 8 o'clock in the evening or something. In the past, we've had roughly 40. So we're about a 20% increase, net increase on gross increase, I guess, on everything, on what it's been in the past. So keep that in mind. Another thing that adds some time to the meetings, which is something that you all wanted and I think is really important, that you have not had time in the past to really discuss at the end of the day what you heard during that day. And some of the things that you thought were impressive, some of the things you thought were really bad. And I think that discussion, while it's fresh in your minds, it's been brought up by many of you that you'd like to have that, and I think that's a really good idea. It does add a little more length to the day, but boy, it can really help your decisions on how things come out. The I think in August also, our August meeting, we'll be having that same discussion, but it'll be more on these scorings themselves. So again, the September meetings are going to still up in the air as far as whether it will be in person or Zoom, but we're trying to go in person. And then at the end of each day, we're trying to plan plenty of time so that you can be discussing what's happening. Mr. Chair, I don't think that there was I know it was brought up, but I don't think it was pushed forward that there maybe should be two different times each day, one at midday and one at the end of the day to discuss what had been heard so far. But do you have any comment or questions on that?
Ron and I have talked quite a bit about just the need to have the discussion as we go through it. We have not talked about once or twice a day and would be very open to suggestions from the council on that.
So a couple things that I'm thinking, and this is sort of my perspective as a legislator who's been doing my work remotely for several months with heavy reliance on Zoom and phone calls. I think as much as it would be nice to meet in person, that we really do have to keep the option open or figure out a way that maybe it's not all or nothing. I think, you know, when I think of the idea, especially if we might be seeing, you know, and science tells us that typically there's an uptick when it starts to get cooler and folks start to spend more time indoors and for a lot of different reasons, you know, the idea of asking folks to come from all over the state and then for all of us to congregate in one room while people are talking, it's like ticking all the boxes of the higher risk things as far as like being indoors and talking a lot. And, you know, so maybe it's something where maybe those of us in the council are in the room, but the presenters are Zoomed in or something like that. Because I, and also just very aware as we've worked through this committee process, you know, different families and different people have different risk factors and different, you know, whether it's their own just sense of risk or whether they have, you know, a child at home with asthma or taking care of an elderly parent or whatever that is. I just would want to make sure that we have options so we're not putting anyone in a position where they're not able to fully participate because they don't want to put their family member at risk or whatever it is. So another thing I would throw out there that I know is different than the way we typically do it, but if we had to do it via Zoom, maybe we don't do days back to back so that we're not, our brains aren't totally drained from the process. You know, I don't know how that works with people's other jobs and whatnot, but just as I've been thinking this through, those are some of the things I'm thinking of. Cause I think, you know, if you didn't have it like two full days of 8 hours on Zoom, like that's a little bit easier to handle. You know, a week ago Saturday, we had a 7 hour long public safety committee meeting. And yes, like Zoom can be difficult, but I also, when we sit in room, you know, sit in room five for 8 hours straight, like that's not necessarily comfortable or like a best case scenario either. Because I honestly don't think, like in the state office building, I don't think there's any room that, you know, the problem too is the rooms in the state office building don't have windows. So I hope that we're able, if we're feeling like things are at a point where we can meet in person indoors, you know, like the House meeting room over in the Capitol with taller ceilings and windows that can be opened and things like that. I just am really uneasy about the idea, especially when we tend to have higher rates here in Ramsey County, of bringing folks from all over the state and putting them in the same physical space. Seems like not the greatest plan from a disease spreading standpoint. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about.
And David?
So thank you. So to Jamie's point, we might want to call physical presence meetings and give members of the council the option to meet at in Zoom, so that there's some of us in a room and some of us are on Zoom. And another idea for meeting together in one room might be to meet over in the Senate office building, because we have room 1200 is very, very big, and the potential for spreading people out there is very nice. And there's also windows so you can see outside. So you might have some things to think about. Do a round robin of the council and say, you know, who wants to meet here in person, who wants to come here on Zoom? Because I agree with you, David, that sitting on Zoom all day long is maddening. I personally don't like darn thing, but I do like to see people in person and like to interact with people when I do this job. And I just don't like the Zoom stuff very much at all. Although you don't have to wear a mask and you can attend a meeting from just about anywhere. So that makes it very convenient. But just a couple of thoughts of maybe some options on how we could actually conduct the meetings later on.
Yeah, thank you both. One of the things I've talked to Mark about is even looking outside of the Capitol complex for a large conference room. There are plenty of hotels that have unused large banquet halls right now that might be possible, so we could create distancing, but we would have to have an electronic connection there. Because I agree, there's some people who you don't want to force to do this, and we want to have a safe meeting. We just want to have one that is sane for most people at the same time. Dan, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I tend to agree with Senator Tomasoni. I think that there's ample room in the Capitol complex to be able to have our meetings and involve people. And to your comment about a motel and a conference room and stuff, my sense is that would cost us money to do that. I don't know how much, but I think that the best place for us to be is in the Capitol complex. And as Senator Tomasoni said, there is one very large room there that can easily be used. And our next meeting is scheduled for when, Mr. Chair?
August 5th.
Well, hopefully by then we'll be in a better place too. So I would hope that we would be able to get something in the Capitol complex. Thank you.
David?
Yeah.
Going through this, listening through, I was just going to throw out is the opportunity for an outdoor venue a possibility? Or does the new electronic, I should say, surveillance or interaction cause that to not be viable?
What I can tell you is that my discussions with staff is everything's on the table. You know, find something that will work. We've got to be able to have people there electronically, whether it's council members or presenters. It's got to be safe. So it's got to be a big space. Outdoors would be wonderful as far as I'm concerned. My attention might be difficult to get as the birds fly by, but I would be happy with that. And if it rains, that would be a challenge, but staff is looking at lots of different possibilities.
I just know that there are a lot of facilities out there that can host a sizable, maybe not as large as what we need, but there are possible opportunities out there to do that would help us in the social distancing, but yet still allow us to have some social interaction with each other face to face. And also just kind of change up the format a little bit.
Yeah. I've thought of the zoo's amphitheater.
An amphitheater would work too. Yeah.
So we'll talk about this in August at our meeting, come back to you and perhaps even with some options. but we're not going to go down one path alone on this. Tom, you've got to.
You're waving. Can you hear me? Can you hear me right now?
I can.
Okay. Well, you know, in my thought on both the Senate office building and the Capitol is, I'm assuming they have new air exchange systems, probably better than the ones we've been in over at the SOB, that might make a difference too. You know, there's a lot of the new particularly the Senate office building is bigger rooms, more cubic air, but probably some different air exchange systems too.
Okay, other comments or suggestions? So stay posted because...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, just to follow up on Senator Tomasoni's comment, we do have, for Senator Tomasoni and Senator Lang's attention especially, we have put a request in to the Senate so to see if we could use one of their larger conference rooms over there for September. I put that request into the LCC chair and vice chair, and President of the Senate, Senator Miller, had directed me to go to Sven Lindquist and talk to him. Sven has met and talked to Cal Ludeman and company, and the word I have back is that they're looking at it. Right now, of course, the building isn't open to anything, so Sven had said we're going to do whatever we can, but we have to take it on a day-to-day basis. So as you and Senator Lang converse with staff over there, you may want to bring it up once in a while. If you wouldn't mind, that would be helpful. But I agree, 1200 would be a really good room to have it, and it's large. We could, there could even be an ante room that could be used for a viewing room for those who are not testifying, or they could be watching it from the hallway.
Great. Any other thoughts or? So give us the timeline of when we're going to get our books, when we have to get our scoring in, when the results will be back to the council.
Sandy, you always have the best calendar in your head on these things. Would you mind if I hand that over to you?
Yeah, so we're hoping to get the links to the proposals sent out to you guys yet this week. Amanda sent out the conflict of interest forms, which can get returned with your evaluation forms, which are due July 16th. We'll be printing the binders next week to be mailed out the end of next week. So that will hopefully give everybody about 2 weeks to review proposals. And then once staff receives the evaluations of the proposals, then that's what we will be discussing at the August 5th meeting.
Okay, any questions? The first 2 weeks of July, you'll do a lot of reading. So any other questions about our process? On the proposals. If not, I'd like to circle back to the accomplishment plans. I think John Schneider is on the line. And I assume that's to answer our question as to why and John, I'm the guy that asked it, so you can blame me, but why did DSS go up $10,000 from $20,000 to $30,000 on a proposal that reduced the amount by 14%. It stuck out. So thank you for coming. Welcome from afar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The answer is very short. This was an oversight that I corrected in our first draft of accomplishment plan in October. I had included $20,000 for DSS, which is approximately 9 to 10% of our personnel budget. When we received more money in December, I inadvertently did not increase the DSS amount proportionately, so I corrected that that budget line item in May to increase it to approximately 9 to 10% of our personnel budget.
And how much as the percent was your increase from the original amount to the December amount, and then how much went, it went down by 14% then in May?
I'd, Mr. Chair, members, I'd have to do the math, but again, it was approximately 10% in October. I didn't increase the budget at all for DSS in December. And then when we were asked to revise the budgets again in May, I corrected it to be approximately, it's 9% right now. 30,000 for DSS compared to 330,000 for personnel, I believe.
Okay, thanks, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I guess my statement is it was simply an adjustment to correct an oversight previously. It wasn't, I didn't look at the percent increases per se.
Geez, I wish we'd given you the December amount so the DSS stayed down and you did more work with the money. Any questions? So we'll come back to the motion, which I think, Kristen, you made the motion. Are you willing to eliminate the provision to hold back approval of the DU proposal based on the information you just heard?
Yes, I am.
So the motion is to simply approve all of the 2020 accomplishment plans as they were most recently sent to you. Is there any discussion on the motion? Amanda, we'll do a roll call vote.
All right. Hartwell.
Yes.
Hartwell votes aye. Swenson.
Yes.
Swenson votes aye. Saxhog.
Yes.
Saxhog votes aye. Shara. Shara.
Unmute yourself, Ron. Please. Come back to Ron. Oh, there he is.
Aye. Okay. Aye.
Shara votes aye. McNamara.
Unmute yourself, Danny.
Aye.
Thank you.
McNamara votes aye. Eggerling.
Yes.
Eggerling votes aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Fabian.
Aye.
Fabian votes aye. Peters.
Yes.
Peters votes aye. Lang.
Yes.
Lang votes aye. Tomasoni.
Yes.
Tomasoni votes aye. Holston.
Aye.
Holston votes aye. 12 ayes, 0 noes.
Motion passes. Thank you all. And thank you, John, for on short notice helping us understand what was in your plan. Is there anything else that the council would like to speak about before we open up to the public for any comments?
Mr. Yeah. Chair, Senator David. Tomasoni has his hand up.
Thank you, David.
I'm just curious. So the host has the ability to mute us all. Does the host have the ability to unmute us all during a roll call vote?
This host doesn't know.
Mr. Chair, I can answer that if you would like.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members, the general protocol with the roll calls is that you would unmute yourself before you vote, because if everyone's unmuted at once, the streaming view for the public is on speaker view. So if you make noise when someone else is voting, you'll pop into their video screen and we'll see you for a minute instead of seeing the person who's voting. So we'd have kind of a weird people popping in and out. So the LCC decided best practice for that was for people to unmute themselves just before they vote so that we're only seeing the voter, or the public is only seeing the voter in the screen. So that's why.
All right. Thank you for the question, David. I'm glad Amanda knows more than me. If there are no other comments from the council or questions, we have an opportunity for the public to address the council. I have absolutely no idea. Oh, Denny, you've got a question.
David, maybe we could always go in the same order. To Senator Tomasoni's point, we would be able to prepare and unmute ourselves ahead of time, like if we went in alphabetical, either forward or backward, whatever. But if we went the same order all the time, we could probably get in the habit of unmuting ourselves just before. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Ron's just not good at it. So, you know, I'm just thinking that maybe somebody else could do it for him. Sorry, Ron.
Ashley, you have a comment.
I just wanted to let folks know that you can also just press the space bar to unmute yourself. That saved me some fumbling a few times. So just a quick tip.
Ron. But unmute yourself, Ron.
It's very difficult for me to operate this unmuting thing because I've had no instruction in Zoom, and Senator Tomasoni is absolutely correct. I'm incompetent with this system, but I'm learning. Maybe Amanda will give me a private lesson here before the next meeting. That's all, over and out.
All right, thank you, Ron. I don't know how the opportunity for the public to address the council works. So Mark or Amanda, can you take over and make sure we do this appropriately?
Mr. Chair, members, Mark, are you okay if I explain the testifier in the waiting room? So we do have one person, one member of the public who did email us asking to testify. So they've just been in the waiting room watching the public stream up until this point. So when you're ready, I'll let them into the actual meeting for them to make their testimony. They have been asked to keep their comments just as typical to around 2 minutes.
Okay, please let them in.
And the testifier's name is Barton Winter.
All right, welcome, Barton.
And he is in the room now.
All right, Barton, unmute yourself and we're all ears. Go ahead, Barton.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay.
Just fine.
All right, good. I was there last. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Good. My public comment deals with Southeast Minnesota. Southeast Minnesota. I'm getting. My voice coming back.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm asking about Southeast Minnesota trout stream easements and communications with DNR Lanesboro and Martin Jennings Fisheries, DNR St. Paul. Right now, Lanesboro indicates that they don't have funding for trout easements. They don't have money for funding. And historically, they have applied for funding from the Outdoor Heritage Council, and maybe not this year. But what I view as a very good opportunity to acquire land, an access which is vital, is not being taken up by this council apparently or looked down upon. And so I would ask that they do this and take this opportunity at this point in time when people are willing to sell. And access is huge down there. It's everything. And so I'm asking that this heritage item, legacy item, be addressed.
All right. Thank you for your comment. The council has yet to see the proposals that are coming in as a result of our request for proposal, but I can assure you if there is a proposal to do trout stream access or other easements, it'll be taken as seriously as any other proposal. We appreciate knowing your concern. Amanda, are there any other comments or any other opportunities for public comment from the public?
Mr. Chair, members, no, that was the only one.
Okay, great. Well, thank you all, Council. We're going to adjourn 10 minutes early. Bye. We'll see you in August.